radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, there you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Healing through our healing.
All of you, family.
Professor Griff. You're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. I'm your host and facilitator. And we started off today's program with our message in the music, Sounds of Blackness, Time for Healing. And it is a time for healing, holistic healing. And we have a special presentation for today's program. It features a talk that was given at the 2012 Black History Showcase. Now, I don't want you to think I'm tardy. The showcase was held Easter Sunday, over the weekend of Saturday and Sunday in April 2012, and the history goes back to Everett Staton was producing the Black History Showcase, and several years ago in February we had a humongous blizzard and they were forced to postpone it until April or until around Easter time. And the turnout was fabulous, fantastic. And so he decided to continue it in the spring. That way he wouldn't have to deal with the weather, the cold, or any possibility of having to reschedule. And so part of it features exhibits, workshops. There's live broadcast from several Philadelphia area radio stations. And on Sunday, I attended one of the workshops on healing and health and wellness. It featured Glenn Ellis, a holistic complementary medicine practitioner. He's an author, two books, Witch Doctor, and his latest book is Information is the Best Medicine. And his cohort in that project was Hillary Baird. She's an editor. She has ghostwritten several books, and she's partnered in a book entitled Health First, The Black Woman's Wellness Guide with Eleanor Hinton Hoyt. And they give some outstanding information. It was free. The showcase was free. This information is the type of material you won't find too many places directed at people of color, particularly of people of African ascent. And because wellness is such a critical factor of life, and our people suffer disproportionately in chronic dis-ease and maladaptive reactions to being in this time and space here in this country, we need information such as this. So following these messages, the next voices you will hear will be Glenn Ellis and Hillary Baird. Stay tuned. It's very informative. Tell your friends about it and have them log on and to listen on demand to this program at their leisure. Also, be advised, if you have an Android smartphone, you can download the Rainbow Soul app, put it in your phone, and you can hear all the hosts, all the programs at your leisure and on demand right from your smartphone. So we have connectivity and mobility, and also it's good because you have access to information like this on the go. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton.
Greetings to the Internet Radio family. This is Reverend Valentine speaking. You know, for nearly 30 years, I have had the distinct experience of being interviewed over every medium of communication available to the public. And except for the metaphysical underground, I can think of no other electronic venue that has been more progressive, more innovative, more insightful, more diligent, more diverse in its demographics, and more courageously supportive of the truth than this ever-growing phenomenon called Internet radio. And this is precisely why I'm here to tell you that it is so vital that you give your wholehearted support to it. Tell a friend. In fact, tell 2, 3, and 4 of your friends. If you are a business owner, support Internet Radio by telling your customers and constituents all about it. Let them know that there is a legitimate and important substitute to all of the prefabricated, super-censored garbage polluting our public airways today. Don't allow the mass media to continue to treat you like a mindless consumer drone. Enhance your awareness. Indulge your critical thinking, your reasoning, and your analysis. Do as I do. Log on, listen in, and then let it be known all about your internet radio experience. Chimatep, beloved family, thank you for listening. Walk in light.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com, or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
And happy Easter for those of you who celebrate.
Happy Sunday for those of you who celebrate Sunday. How's everybody today? Yeah? Good, good. Glad to see everybody. We are really just thrilled before we get started to see you all come out today. And everybody looks so vibrant and healthy. That's all I have to say.
So this afternoon we're going to talk about 10 things that your doctor needs you to know, but is just too busy to tell you. So all of us participate in the same managed care environment, and many of us have had experiences where our doctor is rushing in and out, and they be walking in with a prescription pad in hand and have very little time to talk to us, much less hear our complaints, answer our questions, and leave us leaving and allow us to leave feeling satisfied, capable, and competent of executing the suggestions that they've made for us, and for being much more healthy, both medically and holistically. And so that's not good for anyone. It's not good for us, those of us who are patients participating in the medical system. It's not good for the medical system, to be quite honest with you. People are becoming sicker and sicker. And so Glenn and I have this wonderful experience of being health journalists. You know Glenn better than you know me, but hopefully after this presentation you'll know a little bit better. You know me a little bit better. And so we're exposed to a lot of insider information as health journalists that when we write articles or write books, doesn't always make it into the book. And we always have these conversations about how it's just unconscionable for this information not to get out to people. And so that we're hoping in the course of the next hour, we can share with you a lot of insider tips that will not only help you act more effectively and be more comfortable and more capable within the medical system, they'll also empower you to take care of yourself in ways outside of the system that will allow you to have the healthy and vibrant and purposeful lives that you were created to have. So we're excited to have the opportunity to talk to you about that today.
Go on. No. That was good. Well, you know, Hillary just said about, you know, some of you know me more or better than you know her. And I was thinking about that as she said it, and I realized that you may know me personally better than you know her, but her work is far more well-known than mine. And the impact on each of our lives is far greater than my little personal impact. It's my turn. I didn't interrupt you. I knew what you wanted to say. you're going to be sorry you did this. But seriously, this Hillary and I are, I don't even know how to describe our relationship. Other than to say it ain't going to involve nothing to get married, nothing like that. But we are, you know, brother and sister and friend and confidant and mentor and comforter and consoler. And we just have been so many things to each other. It all started with me watching Hillary walk down 40th Street looking for my store. And I looked out the window and I saw this woman coming up the street. It was almost near closing time, and I said, she looks like she's looking for this store, and I'm about to close. And on top of that, I was a little on edge and frustrated because after a long day of talking to everybody and their mama on 40th Street, I knew I was closing because at 6 o'clock I was going to have dinner with Dick Gregory across the street, and I knew that was going to be another marathon. And so long story short, Hillary came in, and she had... her mother had been recently diagnosed with a very serious illness to which she subsequently transitioned. And so she had heard and thought, you know, this was a place to help get some information that could be helpful. And that's what brought her into the store. And at the time, Hillary was a upwardly mobile, up-and-coming, rising to the top executive in senior management at Pepsi Cola, or should I say a beverage company? I already said it. And, but subsequently, through her experience of being a very close and intimate caregiver for her mother, being involved with her mother's health care through that journey, and also in the process paying attention to what was happening to her own health and what she did and did not understand at that point, Hillary made what was probably one of the bravest decisions that I could ever imagine, because I was just too naive and stupid to know what I was getting myself into. So I didn't really give up anything. I just kind of followed a path. Hillary gave up her entire professional career and decided she wanted to be a health writer to be able to put this information out. And subsequently, not only became what I'm confident you'll agree with me as you become more familiar with her work, she is the best health writer in this country. And I don't say that because she's sitting here, because I got a love-hate relationship with her too, because on many a days throughout the last few years, Hillary has been the editor of some very prominent and important health magazines geared and specifically targeting African Americans, where she has graciously assigned me stories and articles to write for her. And I can't tell you some of the things I called her off the phone as an editor. After I've written brilliant, what I thought is this great article and got all this great information, and I sent it to her, and she said, no, this ain't good enough. You need to take that one sentence and you need to say that clearer. I'm like, how did she think she thought? But as a result of that, I have learned to have deeper patience and tolerance for people who irritate me. But also, she has helped me to become someone who is absolutely much more responsible and focused on what I'm saying to people who are looking to people like Gloriana for a source of good, credible information. So she has really helped me because she's edited and currently the editor for the Black AIDS Institute newsletter. She's been the editor of the National Medical Association's consumer magazine called Healthy Living. She was the editor for Real Health magazine. She's been the editor for HealthQuest, you know, which many of you are probably more familiar here locally with HealthQuest magazine. Hillary was the editor for that. We hear about that term editor, but this is a tremendous responsibility, particularly when we talk about the health of African Americans, right? And who's responsible for ultimately, no matter how many writers are writing articles and stories, but who's ultimately responsible for what's going to end up in the book, or what's going to end up in the newspaper, or what's going to end up in the magazine? So I've watched her with envy and with great bewilderment of how serious she takes that responsibility. So a lot of times, you know, I have to be patient because I listen to Hillary talk, and she talks, you know, y'all just heard, she, you know, it's like, who, you know, she got the thing, she's real deliberate and purposeful about how she's conveying this information, because like me, she understands how critical what's going on with African Americans right now is. And at the core and the center of that is health. And so now, you know, I could go on about how we could do this whole hour just about the impact.
Come on, right?
I ain't even nobody act like they want me to stop. I'm looking for facial expressions. Everybody is.
You're not looking at mine.
I'm looking at the ones that matter. They can't hear it yet. But anyway, let me just say this. Hillary has most recently authored her book, which is here called Health First. This is an encyclopedia for health and wellness for black women. And when you hear the word encyclopedia, you always think of A to Z. This is A to Z. So this is not just about what to do for your blood pressure or how to pick a doctor. This is about the emotional aspects of our health and the mental states of our well-being and how our relationships impact who we are. And so this is really like going to be the gold standard for books as it relates to the health of African American women. Prior to that, you probably heard about her through the book that she did and authored for Angela Bassett and Courtney Vance. Anybody heard about that book?
No.
But anyways, she did their book. She did one for Venus and Serena. Y'all know Venus and Serena. I'll go say, y'all say no, but we can stop this thing right now. But and she did Carol's daughter, the sister who has the hair and beauty product out of New York. She did her book, her biography, and other things that this we could go on. But I'm just saying, this sister has really, really committed herself. And then closing, what we did, and I was here a couple of months ago, I think. Some of you were here for a book signing I did, and Hillary was an integral part of me even getting that book to fruition and making sure I was duly motivated to keep going and writing, but she was here for that program. And shortly thereafter, the next week, we talked about this kind of collaboration, because neither of us have ever done anything like this before. But more and more, this is becoming critical. This whole health thing is becoming critical. We don't understand the depth and the magnitude of what's getting ready to happen. Healthcare, there's so many things that we're getting ready to really see that's going to let us know, man, this thing is serious. And so we think, hey, Glenn, this doctor's thing, you know, you go to the doctor and you got 10 minutes for a lot of reasons that we're going to get into. But let's assume, just for sake of conversation, that you make an appointment with your doctor and you go to the doctor and the doctor is going to spend 10 to 15 minutes. But let's suppose that when you made your appointment and you went in to sit down with the doctor, that the doctor had an hour and a half just for you. How much more information do you think you would be able to leave there with? That's what we're here today to talk about. What are the things your doctor would want you to know if they weren't just so busy to tell you about it? That's what we're going to do today. So, you know, I'm honored. I'm telling you, this is probably, I'm hopeful, and I'm confident Hillary and I will look back at this as a very historic day. I'm grateful that all of you all are part of this history-making day, because I feel something, you know, sustaining coming out of this that's going to go take us places that we don't even know about yet, you know, and do things that impact many more of us, and particularly the people who look like us who are disproportionately impacted by the things that are affecting every man, woman, and child in this country. I'm going to pass.
Okay, I you all know Glenn life better than you know me. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a shorter overview of Glenn, even though I'm very gracious to that lovely overview. So you all know that Glenn, for the past 20 years, has been a very significant contributor and leader in terms of black health in Philadelphia. So many of you know him from back on WAJT and the various radio shows that he's had during the year. Many of you have patronized his business strategy for well-being and gotten personal consultations from him. I always laugh at him because I would run into him at Whole Foods and somebody would have me stand up on the supplements aisle asking some questions about supplements. People know him as the herb guy from 40th Street, right? So we all have interacted with Glenn in this way. But there are a lot of things that Glenn does and has done that nobody knows about. And so the thing that people don't often understand is that Glenn is internationally recognized as an expert in many different things. And so in addition, so Glenn's from Birmingham. He attended the University of Pennsylvania. He went to the International College of Biodynamics, the Atlantic College of Homeopathy. So and then he's progressed in his career from there. So he's become a health journalist for nationally syndicated columns for the National Newspaper Publishers Association, blackdoctors.org. So Glenn has been writing for many of the publications that I've been involved with as well. But he also has traveled the world and is internationally known as an expert on bioethics, on clinical trials in African Americans. And he's traveled to places like the Ukraine, the Netherlands, Germany. He travels to Cuba frequently, where he participates in medical conferences and teaches the world about these subjects, and particularly as they relate to us. So Glenn has a really stellar reputation internationally and contributes to the international dialogue, particularly around people of color or minority populations in other countries. He is recently the author of Information is the Best Medicine, which is second book, the first book was called Witch Doctor. Glenn, would you like to pull up your book? Thank you. And so he told you the story of how we met. He told you a bit about our friendship. I talk to Glenn almost every day. He is one of the few full-time black health writers in the United States. He's been doing this for a long time. The quality of the information is just excellent. And has created a health community or contributed significantly to the health community in Philadelphia. So I'm very grateful for Glenn and very appreciative of my friendship with him. And there are not that many black folks who are self-employed, and that's something that we share and really enjoy. So I'm going to teach you these 10 ideas, and I'm going to start with the first one, and I'm very familiar with some of the basics in this room, so many of you already know this, and that is, even though the medical system focuses disproportionately on physical health, you cannot separate the body from the mind and the spirit. So when Glenn and I think about health, which is commonly called wellness, you hear about health as wellness, you hear the word wellness, we're thinking about health from a mind, body, and spirit approach. And so for those of you who don't understand the connection between fear, I'm going to give you a quick example. And so the example is what happens when we worry. So worry is something that takes place in our mental realm, right? It takes place in our mind. And so we may be worrying about any topic, how our child is doing. So we're worrying, when we worry, it increases our heart rate, which is taking place in our physical body. Maybe it causes our hands to get sweaty. Maybe our breathing becomes more rapid or more shallow. These are changes that take place in our physical realm. And when we're worrying, we quite honestly lose access, much of the access to our spiritual being, our sense of ourselves that's bigger than ourselves and connected to other people. Lots of times when we're worrying, we're really self-absorbed and preoccupied with our problems and not able to experience our larger self. By contrast, when we're able to slow ourselves down and perhaps pray or meditate or do some deep breathing, or journal or do some spiritual study, which somebody might describe those as spiritual practices, we can all often calm our thoughts, which is taking place in our mental body, and our heart rate and our pulse and these types of things will calm down. This is very significant for African Americans because we suffer from chronic stress. And chronic stress means we're stressed all the time. The body was meant to be stressed, and you engage in some kind of a fight or a flight reaction, and then 30 seconds or a minute or 5 minutes later, it'd be over and you'd chill again. Well, that's not the case with many of us. We're chronically stressed, and it undermines our immune system. It causes our body to struggle to regenerate itself or to have difficulty regenerating. Many of us lose hair, our nails don't grow. Men and women can become less fertile because these are not essential functions when you're in a fight or flight situation. Many people lose their appetite. And so when we talk about wellness, we're talking about mind, body, and spirit. And so what does it look like to be holistically healthy? So somebody who is spiritually healthy understands that they are made in the spiritual image and likeness of God, that they were placed here with a purpose and a calling, that nobody in the history of humankind has been able to execute their calling, and nobody moving forward will be able to, that they're unique. And for that reason, they are incredibly important. It is incredibly important for them to figure out what that purpose or calling is and to execute it, okay? And so in indigenous societies, the elders of a society often divine the purpose of an incoming spirit, and the child is given a name related to the purpose, and the community knows the child's purpose, and they nurture and foster and help educate the child and support them. Everybody's supporting everybody else in actualizing that purpose. Unfortunately, those traditions have been lost in our community many times, although many of the people in this room, I know, have a level of consciousness where they work out of sense of calling. And certainly in the largest society, that is not believed in at all. As a matter of fact, it's a very intentional attempt to separate yourself from your sense of purpose. Because if you don't know who you are, other people can tell you who you are, and it can tell you that. And just being a capitalist society, this is how people make money. So that's spiritual health. Mental health we don't talk about very often, particularly in our community. And so when we think about mental health, a lot of times we think about the brain. But for those of us who have computers, maybe we should think about our brain as kind of like the hardware, the computer itself, this 3-pound organ in our head. And our mind is more like the software that runs different operating systems. And so a healthy mind has a good memory, is very creative, it can focus, it can concentrate, it can identify actions that need to be taken and direct you to make those actions. It is purposeful, it makes choices. The feelings that it experiences are proportionate to what's going on in the world. So yesterday I was right outside and I watched this young woman. She was in a car. She was behind a man who was letting pedestrians cross the street. And so the pedestrians were crossing, but the young woman was in a hurry. And so she shouted to the man, come on, move, well, he can't move. And so that emotional reaction is disproportionate to the circumstance. It may be appropriate in some other emergency circumstance. So she was in a state of mental imbalance. Out of balance. And so when we're out of balance, and society encourages people to be out of balance, we tend to be maybe frustrated or angry, or we talk about people or we're judgmental, or we think we're right all the time, or we're right, other people's wrong, or we get caught in a victim mentality. So these are some examples of unhealthy thinking. And actually in the book, there's a long list of unhealthy thought processes that every person engages in at some point in time, you can do a mental checklist and get a sense of your own mental balance. And so on a physical level, somebody who's physically healthy, all of their limbs and organs and tissues and cells are able to function very well and do the things they're supposed to be able to do. And you should be able to carry out your life in the world and take care of your family, your children, and your calling without any obstructions or difficulties in terms of your physical being. So that's what we want to talk about in terms of wellness. But wellness in this society takes work. And lots of times you have to extricate yourself from popular culture to be well in a holistic sense. So maybe you need to extricate yourself from the media. And so how can you hear your own sense, your own self-sense, or develop your own gifts and talents if you're always listening to what other people say about you, particularly in our community, the things that people that say about us are often not life-affirming. And so somebody who's spiritually healthy will engage in prayer, meditation, journaling, spiritual study, service, sacrificial giving, these types of behaviors. Somebody who's physically healthy will pay a lot of attention to their sleep. Black people are the least well-rested people. people in the United States. We need between 7 and 8 hours of sleep, and particularly black women, who are the worst. Often don't get a little bit more than 6 to 6.5 hours of sleep. If you don't sleep, your body will be eventually going to crumble up under you. During sleep, your body rejuvenates itself. And many other things that we don't understand. So we need to drink plenty of water. We want to eat foods that are in a state closest to the state that God made them in. So if we pick the example of corn, corn on the cob is probably about the closest to how God made it or nature made it, defined in nature. Then maybe you can scrape the kernels off when they're, you know, in their kernels. But then there gets to be cream corn, chicken corn, and butter corn that you get where there starts to be all these additives and preservatives. Canned corn can be kernels, but they're toxin-modified associated with cans. But then at the other extreme, all sorts of junk foods are made from corn. Did you know Twinkies are made from corn? Cheetos, right? And so you want to, right? So maybe these foods, not just corn chips. And so we want to air, we want to eat foods that are as close to how we find in nature as God made them. And, from a mental health standpoint, lots of times you have to turn off the television, the radio, disconnect ourselves from our cell phone and texting all the time in order to keep everything healthy. We may need to seek counseling. This is not something that black folks have a long tradition in, but increasingly we're starting to understand the importance of mental health and we're becoming increasingly engaged in the mental health system. So these are some behaviors helping people to be holistically healthy behaviors. Now, our second point is that when your medical doctor tells you you're healthy, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're well in this holistic sense, okay? So we're talking mind, body, spirit when we're talking wellness. When your doctor is talking health, the medical model for health means that you don't have a disease, you don't have an illness, and you are not disabled, okay? And so we think that this definition of health is actually too narrow, right? And maybe it's something that can't be applied. So for instance, you could be smoking cigarettes and not have a disease yet. We wouldn't describe that as healthy. You could be getting high all day. You could have insomnia. You could be worried sick about your child. You could be addicted to prescription drugs. You could be a binge drinker.
You could be getting your butt moved at night.
Exactly.
By your spouse.
Right. Exactly. And so none of us would call these behaviors healthy, right? And many of them actually lead to the illnesses and diseases and conditions that your doctor would then want to treat. And so these are things that we need to consider in our model of health, which is why we think it's important to take a more holistic view of health. There's another reason that we think that this definition is too narrow, and that's because health is a process. So it's not like you didn't have diabetes yesterday and had it today. By medical model, that can happen. But in reality, your blood sugar has been increasing over time. So the definition of diabetes, for instance, is when your fasting blood sugar, which this means the amount of blood sugar in your blood, glucose in your blood after you haven't eaten for 8 hours. When your fasting blood sugar hits 126, then you're said to have diabetes. Well, the day earlier, maybe it was at 125. Are you so different today than you were yesterday? And it's been creeping up from 120 and 110 and 90, and so it's been creeping up over time. Most of the major diseases take at least 10 years, sometimes 20 and 30 years to develop. A heart attack just doesn't happen between yesterday and today. It's been developing for 10 or 20 years. And so by the medical model, we missed all these years during which we could make an intervention and stop the progression from happening. So we think that this definition of health, that you don't have a disease or an illness or disability, is way too narrow. Unfortunately, black people tend to accept that medical model of illness. And so we believe, and particularly black women, this is one of the things we read about the book, black women define health as not having a disease, an illness, or disability. And that definition is too narrow to our detriment. We also define health as looking good. So you can look good and have that long list of things that we would probably all agree about. You can define healthy happiness. You can have a precondition so that in a day or a week or a month or a year, you're going to have a very serious and life-threatening illness and still be healthy. We also, as black black women walk around with engaging in a tremendous amount of denial. And so it's a coping mechanism for many of us, because many of us feel very difficult lives, and I don't want to minimize that. But what the denial does is it robs us of the opportunity to make an intervention, to make change earlier on in the process. And black men, as we know, are disproportionately disconnected from the medical system. Many times when the black boy graduates from pediatrician, he may not see the doctor again until he gets sick. But even among men who do have doctors, we know that they see the doctor half as much or less than half as much as a woman does. And even that one-up, one-down interaction doesn't always work well for men. Doctors tend to communicate differently with men. They tend to communicate less with men than they communicate with women. And so that definition is not working well for black men either.
Wow. How about that? Yo, she wanted her stock so high in my book, just to know what she's talking about. And that's why we have to continue to create these kinds of platforms for us to be able to get information out into our community. So, you know, this isn't brought to you by Procter & Gamble or, you know, we'll be back after a word from our sponsors. This is the kind of stuff that Hillary and I are proud to be able to have partnered and collaborated and felt the responsibility to do these kinds of things and to bring this kind of information. And just a little known black history fact, Hillary also is from Cleveland, and she went to Princeton. And she's a personal friend of... Who said that? And she got pictures to prove it. And guess what? That's before either one of them was like glamorous. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's not there.
Can we keep going?
Okay. I digress. I'm sorry.
They give you all some points now.
Listen, we black people, we need to know things too, right? You know what I mean? So, you know, so if Hillary kind of frames that, that whole concept of this health model and how we have allowed ourselves to kind of acquiesce into this whole pigeonhole where we accept this model of what it means to be healthy. So we take those 10, 12 minutes and go to the doctor, right? Spend that appointment. Be told that, well, it looks like your blood pressure's under control with the medication. It looks like this, you know. We'll keep an eye on your sugar and blah, 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 and we leave with a sense of thinking we're healthy. But as Hillary said, that's way too narrow of a focus for us to allow ourselves to exist in. That's a false sense of security, and it absolutely will lead us on a slippery slope downward into further illness, disease, and subsequently, unfortunately, for many of us, into death. Just based on us accepting that model and ignoring all these other things. And so let me just start by, I want to say a couple things real quickly, and let me talk about what would allow us to be given that kind of a narrow picture. It's the medical model that the system basically is based on. And let me go back and explain what that means. We talk about our doctors and their training and you know, expertise and the specialties and that sort of thing. But we got to go back and say, we're looking at 4 years of medical school, and a doctor goes to medical school, right? Two of those years are basically what they call classroom, where they actually study, you know, courses, you know, chemistry. The biggest course in those 2 years is basically anatomy, knowing what the parts of the body are and how they function. But now, just to show you how narrow and warped this medical model is, during the course of those 4 entire years of medical school, there's one semester, September, whenever school, the semester starts at some point in September, maybe after Labor Day, until they get out for Christmas break. They spend that one semester, that short period of time, studying pharmacology. Right? Now, you know how central pharmaceuticals and prescription drugs and those types of things are in the whole practice of medicine. So all you know, now that, and it's not like that's the only thing they're doing in that semester. That's one of four, five, six, seven courses that they're taking, so that those hours are being devoted to just understanding pharmacology. Now remember, these people, all of us in this United States of America, we comprise 5% of the entire population of the world. 5%. 56% of all the drugs in the world are consumed by America. So, once again, just go back and understand the context that we're looking at this whole discussion that we're talking about, a medical model that's based on us being given an average of about 10 minutes per appointment. So now you're talking about taking your entire life and condensing the attention to your health in that 10-minute time frame. You're trying to give it to someone who, through no fault of their own, they're just a victim of the system just like you are, right? Through no fault of their own, they've got limited ability to come forth with an adequate amount of information. They have limited amount of time to properly address what it is. And subsequently, based in that little short window of time, they have to make a determination, a diagnosis, a treatment, and a prognosis in that little bit of time. So they have to assess all of this little bit of data that they got in this little bit of time, and then decide, okay, well, your pressure's up. We need to put you, I'm going to put you on a beta blocker. Then you come, so now it just kind of evolves from there. And so when we look at this model and we start to understand how this whole thing is framed, so we don't even have the luxury of being able to truly have an opportunity for a person to know who we are as a person, as an individual, as a patient. The closest we'll come to that is whatever happens at the first initial visit when you visit a doctor, when they got that little form. So all we can do is hope and pray that somehow everything about our life will be condensed to what the answers are in that particular form. Right? Have you ever had this? Do you know that? Did your mama have a cousin who was ever, you know, an alcoholic? Then, not only do we have to hope that that form can capture that kind of information, we got to say, now, who and when is going to sit down and read, take the time to read and care enough about me and my mama's cousin to know how to take that information and have it ready and accessible when I come in to the examining room for a doctor's appointment. So I just wanted to kind of, in as dramatic but yet as civilized a way, try to help us understand how critical this kind of conversation is for us to be able to know what's necessary to take control of our health. That we don't, I don't care, they can pass 5 more health reform bills. We can get twice as much insurance. We can have no deductible. But it's all going to be done through the context of this existing medical model and our limited mindset on how we're going to utilize whatever we have access to. So we go and we look at all of, you know, then we talk about how the doctors will assess, you know, what your blood fasting sugar is, and, you know, all of those tests and the diagnosis. But what are we able to really gather from that? How is that translatable into what I do every day of my life? How does knowing that I'm pre-diabetic, what do I do with that information? Other than allow myself to slip into some sense of comfort that I ain't there yet, but I can still do this, this, and this. Well, I don't have to start thinking about that yet because I'm not there yet. And, you know, and the crazier part about it is what it does is allows us to keep pushing the needle further and further and further, so that when it will, I'm now hearing people who approach me in the conversation about diabetes or their concerns or understandings they want to know about it. People are now starting to say, I just don't want to start having to take insulin shots. Mm-hmm. You know, we move past the acceptance of like, okay, I got diabetes. And then we move past the acceptance of how much medication we may or may not have to do. And so now the danger point is the point at which you have to take an injection of insulin.
So you're saying that we are accepting diabetes as inevitable all the time?
Yes. I think, would y'all agree with me?
Yes.
Okay, this is not just my opinion, you know. So I'm saying this is what has happened across the board with diabetes and many other things in our lives. And you know, in some of it, as you illustrated and talked about in terms of just how we have you know, our stress level and how acceptable and continuous and ever-present stress is in our lives. And we are disconnected with understanding what does that have to do with how I'm feeling and how my health and wellness is. We just have to we disconnected that. And unfortunately, our history and our legacy has us in a way and has spoken to us in a way that has caused us from a coping and survival point of view that we have to dismiss a whole bunch of stuff just to get through the day and to move forward. We've always been in this survival mode that causes us to continue to compartmentalize health and actual knowledge. And that's a part of what happens when cultures are robbed and when you're denied your culture, because indigenously, health and wellness is a part of our culture. See, it's very un-African to live and behave the ways in which we have accepted and assimilated into this society. But if you have been disconnected from that, you have no idea to know that that's the case. And so what we're talking about basically is rehumanizing ourselves to love and respect ourselves for who and what we are. And so when we start to look at, here we're talking about people that are trained to do this. They're trained, you know, there's no Marcus Welby models, right? That's why I was a TV show, because it was so unique and so idealistic that a doctor could be able to have such a holistic approach to your life. You know, Marcus Welby, I remember episodes, he would go home from the office and his wife would say, Marcus, dinner's on the table. And he'd say, hold on, honey, I gotta call Billy and Johnny to make sure that they're eating vegetables. I told them I just want to check and see what they're doing. And so this is holistic kind of thing that we no longer even see in existence. And if that continues, what are we really going to expect with this whole model of thing? And if you can grasp the shortcomings of this whole notion, then you can start to really appreciate why this is a critical time for us. You know, that time frame that the doctors are limited to is shaped in part in the insurance model. You know, they have to see an X number of patients every day just to be able to break even. I've got a friend who's a doctor with a pen, and he told me for his office visit, if you want to go there just to pay cash, it's like $285. I jokingly call him Conrad Murray because I know him before. And you know what? It speaks to the kind of where medicine is now, because this guy has a patient who can get whatever he wants. And I was at a homecoming at Cheney one time with this guy. And I'm going to put it out there real quick. I was with this guy at homecoming. And I don't know if y'all know about Cheney homecoming up on the hill. They have food and they be barbecuing and, you know, get tailgating or whatever, right? And so this guy's sitting at a table with like a big tray of fried chicken, some big old tray of mashed potatoes and macaroni and cheese, all the stuff you should eat. Right over here is a big garbage can of iced up with little things of beer, right? Then they had a little thing on this side with all the liquor. And he's sitting there, and he's chain smoking Cools, giving everybody, you know, he's like the server. And sitting next to him was Conrad Murray, his doctor. But anyway. primary admirer of this guy told me that he charges $285 for an office visit if you just had no insurance and had to pay cash. But he says when he submits an office visit to the insurance company, the reimbursement on that, the insurance company will only pay $85. So now what he has to do is that same office visit that he would use the time for that $285, he's got to fit enough people in there to equal $285 just to keep his costs under control and to break even. So this is enough, this is how that insurance model is what's driving why there's an average amount of time for each office visit. All right. Is that okay so far? Y'all following, right? Okay.
Okay. So we're going to start to talk about, since this is the setting that the model isn't holistic, that you can be healthy but not healthy, and that the doctors are fabulous people, well-intentioned people, but their training is what their training is, and it's not what it's not, just to be honest about that. And the medical model is driving them to see everybody, see something new every 7 to 10, maybe 15 minutes max. Let's start to talk about what you can do about it, okay? And so in the Black community, in America in general, but in our community in particularly, the most important thing that we can do for our health is to protect ourselves from this epidemic of what's called diabetes. So diabetes and obesity run hand in hand, but there are also all sorts of kind of preconditions or metabolic conditions that are often precursors to diabetes that occur before you get diabetes. So I'll just say what some of them are. So there's obviously pre-diabetes, but a lot of people struggle with something called metabolic syndrome. It's also called syndrome F. Many people are insulin resistant. Eventually, excess weight is probably going to lead us to diabetes. And so the projections are that by the year 2020, 52% of the population will either have diabetes or pre-diabetes. And for those of us who know what that means, it dramatically, first of all, diabetes robs people of their energy because the energy can't get into their cells. So you lose your energy, you lose your quality of life. You also lose your ability to think clearly long before any of the things that we're most afraid of. And so your quality of life plummets along in on a little slippery slope along the way. We talked about these things continuum. Eventually, diabetes increases your risk of heart disease, stroke, kidney failure, kidney disease, amputations, blindness, and a lot of situations that we don't want to find ourselves in. So we need to very actively protect ourselves against that. And so our weight management is an important piece of that. When we talk about weight in a society, there's often a judgment associated with it. The judgment is that if you struggle with your weight, the assumption is that you're lazy or you're gluttonous, and that is absolutely not the case. And so there are some people who overeat, but some of those people who overeat have hormonal imbalances that are driving them to overeat in ways that they cannot control. Obesity is often caused, or excess weight is often caused by hormonal imbalances, so our insulin is becoming out of balance, our thyroid hormones out of balance, increasingly there's constant conversation about being leptin resistant. We know that dieting makes you gain weight, right? Paradoxically, it does. Prescription drugs, anybody who's ever taken steroids, but we know some of the injection birth control pills like Depo-Provera make people gain weight. They're called obesogenic chemicals in the environment. So for instance, one of the ingredients to a tan that you may eat your fruits and vegetables out of can make you gain weight. It interferes with your metabolism, toxins in the environment. So there are very many reasons that people gain weight. Many of them are beyond their control, and we need to be empathetic to people because it affects many, if not most of us. As a matter of fact, the projections are, right now I think it's 72% of Black men and 78% of Black women are overweight or overweight or obese. This compares to about 68% of white people. And but the projections are that by 2035, 97%, for instance, of Black women will be overweight or obese. And so this means that a child,
97%
by when? 2035, and we're actually tracking ahead of that. So that means a child. And black folks have the most have the highest rate right now. Right. But this, the whole society is turning this way. So the child born today, unless people are protecting this child from the food supply anyway, has almost no chance of living out their normal lifespan and a healthy life, okay? And so we really need to protect ourselves by making sure we're really well nourished. When we think of people who suffer from malnutrition, we often think of whatever, starving children in another part of the world. But many times people who are struggling with their weight are malnourished. And so what we need to do is take in the highest quality nutrition possible, and this means foods that are most like dietitians. We want to avoid chemicals in our food. If there are more than 7 or 8 ingredients on the label, if there are any ingredients on the label that you don't recognize, your body's not going to recognize them either, and it's going to store them away in fat. It's going to sequester them because it doesn't know what to do. If it's poison, it'll store it in fat. And so we want to avoid chemicals in our homes. We want to make sure that we remain active and drink plenty of water. We really want to make sure that we sleep, because sleep is a way that we rejuvenate ourselves. And when we don't get enough sleep, our body drives us to eat for energy. So these are some ways that we can take care of ourselves that way. We also need to protect ourselves from fat prejudice, which is rampant in healthcare. Fat prejudice is kind of the equivalent, occurs at equivalent levels, and medical providers admit this, to prejudice around having substance abuse or mental health problem. And so you can, if you're concerned that your doctor is demonstrating fat prejudice, you can ask them, you know, you can say to them, hey, you know, I know that I'm overweight, and it may look to you as though I don't care, but I do. Because doctors like to see them. They know you're trying to engage differently. You may need to confront your doctor and let them know, hey, I think that we're not communicating here. I'm wondering if it's because I'm overweight.
Let me just jump in and say something to that point. This is critical. She said, doctors like to succeed. And that's a very important point. So that's why it's critical that if you feel that that there's some kind of fat prejudice, right, that you should say, hey, doc, listen, I know you may think I don't care, but I really do. Because, see, now what we're also experiencing is there's a change where there's not going to become more of a model for doctors to be paid based on outcomes, right? So if a doctor is feeling that you are not going to give them a good outcome, that there's no hope, that you really don't care, they're not going to give you what attention you otherwise may be able to get. So that's why it's important to engage in that. Okay.
So why don't we talk about who's who in the hospital and who can be our secret weapon to help us?
Okay, and which is critical, because at any given time, any one of us can end up in a hospital. I don't care how much you like to think about that or not think about it. How much you're into alternative, holistic, whatever. But at the middle of the night, when somebody has got an emergency or some crisis happens, you're not going to go to the Whole Foods to see if Glenn's there to see what hurt you. Right? Somebody passed out, or whatever. So anyway, what we have to understand is the role that this hospital model is central, because all of these doctors' offices and primary care are really feeders to hospitals. Hospital is really the center of this whole hub of things. So primary doctors are gateway people. They're the gatekeepers to decide who moves on to the next level. And subsequently, you go from there, you may go into a specialist who would then be someone that can then structure a scenario where you would be a candidate for surgery or for some other type of extensive hospital-based treatment, whether it's chemo, radiation, whatever it may be. But here's the point. Who are the people that are taking care of you in the hospital? Because somebody comes up to you in the hospital and says, hi Glenn, I'm Dr. Hillary, and I'm here, I just want to take a few measurements on you. So what does that mean that she's Dr. Hillary?
What do I mean by that?
Is she an intern? Is she a resident? Is she a chief resident? Is she a chief attending physician? Is she the hospital? Is she the intensivist? Is she just an intern? Is she a specialist in one of the other subspecialties, oncology or whatever? So we have to understand that the answer to that question about that person that's talking to you is critical, because one, it'll help you know whether they even qualify to do what they're now trying to do. Because 9 times out of 10, most of us are going to end up in a teaching hospital. And they don't just call a teaching hospital because they couldn't think of a better word to come up with. Because that's what they do. So we got to stop and think about all of those categories, and time won't permit us to really go into each and every one of those things, to go into the depths about what is required, what kind of training goes behind them, and that sort of thing. But you got to know that. But more importantly, or certainly as importantly, are the secret weapons that we don't have any appreciation for, and in most cases, knowledge of. Number one is the physician's assistant, right? A name, that's a title we're starting to hear more and more about a PA or a physician's assistant. These are people who are basically, depending on what state you're in, capable of providing the same level of care as your primary care doctor. And then more and more what's happening now, they're integrating them into hospital setting. So you're going to start to see less and less actual direct contact with a medical doctor. And ironically and not surprisingly, the insurance companies are behind driving that. Why? Because it's cheaper to pay and reimburse the care given by a primary physician or MD. The second one is the nurse practitioner, which is now in Pennsylvania, you're going to see more medical centers that are no longer requiring a medical doctor to even be there, because a nurse practitioner, for all practical purposes, has equally as much training and skill set as the medical doctor. But that was one of the historical things that spoke to gender bias that happens in all other sectors of our society. But also, it was a priority on doctors not wanting to be paid, and you know, wanted to make the extra pay, so that just to have a doctor on staff, even though they did nothing, would have been able to, you know, to cause a difference in the price thing. So these nurse practitioners, and they're also people who are able to holistically look at your care. And your nurse practitioners and your registered nurses in the setting where you get your care are people who have the training and the background to be able to give you this other kind of care. You've got the pharmacist who now is being allowed by law to renew prescriptions. Right? So that's a good thing and a bad thing. But the good part of that is that what pharmacists will be able to do in doing that, you now have somebody who truly understands pharmacology and can look at just not getting that prescription renewed, but they can look at it in the context of all the other medication and be much more proactive with you in identifying opportunities where there may be side effects or some kind of harmful reaction. And then you've got the difference between what everybody talks about. Well, I had a stroke, or I had a diabetic episode, and I saw a dietitian while I was in the hospital, and she gave me some Remsima. But you need to know that there's a difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. The nutritionist, a certified nutritionist, is the person who has the greatest degree of impact on your health and well-being, because they are looking at things in terms of how those things are able to be, what foods are appropriate and impactful to be assimilated to make a difference in your health, positively and negatively. So those are just some of the small list of secret weapons that we got to start to explore on how to use better access and take advantage of those.
We also want to make sure that we get additional medical opinions. So whenever you're diagnosed with a disease, an illness, a condition, or about to have a procedure or a surgery, always seek additional opinions. This is not going to offend your doctor. It's actually going to help them, because different practitioners within the same specialty see things differently, and it's helpful for them to talk to each other. Then sometimes people with different specialties treat the same illness from a different perspective, and so that happens as well. And then medicine is also an art, in addition to the science. And so the same doctor looking at the same pathology report, for instance, so this is looking at your tissue, cancer tissue, for instance, may see the results differently depending upon when they look at it. And different doctors may look at the same, for instance, film for your mammogram and see it differently. And so dramatic differences can exist. And so you want to make sure you get additional opinions. You also want to make sure that you track your own laboratory results. So whenever you give blood or they do a urinalysis on you, a report is generated, and the doctor gets it, but you want to make sure that you get a copy of the report too, and if you're familiar with Excel and can do it on your computer, set up a spreadsheet for yourself, if not, just do it on a piece of paper, and you want to track your results over time, because the doctor last time is so busy in and out, they're just looking at an individual measurement. You want to look at what's happening over time, because remember how we talked about diseases may take 5 years, 10 years, 20 years to develop. You can watch it develop. So you can go to a website, it's called labresultsonline.com, labresultsonline.com, and that will tell you what all the difference, all these big words on your lab test will tell you what they're measuring, what the healthy value should be, and you can see whether you're inside or outside of the range. You can also use your computer and Google what it means to be outside of a range, if you're high or low, what it might indicate. And that will further inform you and help you have a higher quality conversation with your doctor. And the more your doctor feels like he or she is going to succeed with you, the more educated you are, the more helpful you are. Lo and behold, your 7-minute appointment when your doctor was coming in with a prescription pad, filling it out as they were coming to the door. Lo and behold, you'll find that if your doctor feels they can succeed and you're engaged and well-informed, your appointment will start to get longer and longer and longer. So you move out from being a 7-minute person to a 10-minute to 15 or 20-minute person. And that's what you need for your
doctor. So they're going to take minutes off of those 7-minute people to give it to the people who they feel are giving them greater chances to have successful patients. So you could be one of those people who they take minutes from or they give minutes to. Right? So, y'all know we can go on, right? But we have to let the room go because there's another event scheduled. Hillary and I are going to be outside the room. We got our books available for anybody who's interested in purchasing them, and I'm hoping that everybody in here. Because freedom ain't free. We like to eat too, okay? But seriously, and we'll be around to answer questions. I hope you all did finish. We fill out the form because for those who are interested, we'll be letting you know. Because we may think about trying to do some ongoing kinds of stuff to really keep a good source of accurate information going on in the community. And we just can't thank you all enough for being here. Hillary, I love you.
Thank
you.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades, where no military.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. The Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try it.